Before I get started, actually, does anybody happen to know what this is? I know you know. Nobody knows. Nobody ever knows. So this is supposed to be a roundabout. So we chose this as part of our logo for the traffic control project because it's a CDN, and roundabouts were originally developed to help, you know, control the flow of traffic. So it's kind of a little bit of a throw to that. So anyway, my name is Jeff Elslow, and I'm here to talk about routing CDN traffic at scale. I work for Comcast using Apache Tomcat. So this will be interesting based off of the prior talks. So about me, I joined Comcast in 2008, and I joined the CDN engineering team in 2013, and I led development of two components called Rascal and CCR. These were internal names. Rascal is a monitoring component we now call Traffic Monitor, and CCR stood for Comcast Content Router. So obviously we had to change that when we open sourced. I'm part of the Traffic Control PMC, and I'm one of, we've got three leads right now on the CDN engineering CDN engineering team at Comcast, and I'm one of the three. And as you can see, I'm a motorcycle enthusiast, so if you want to talk after this, we can. So, Jim Jag did a real good job of setting the table about proxies and caching and all that stuff. So from our perspective, content delivery networks exist to improve the customer experience or user experience and to improve the network efficiency by moving all of that content close to the user. So what is a CDN? A CDN is a collection of software, and in our mind, this represents most of the components you need to run a CDN. The caches piece is something that's actually very well known, very well solved for today. We've got examples with HTTPD, as we just saw with JimJag. We've got Apache Traffic Server, another great Apache project, as well as Squid and Nginx. But the other pieces of the pie were pieces that we decided we needed to build ourselves, and one of them, let's see if I can work this. This one right here, this is the one that we're going to be talking about today, Traffic Router. So the components that we had to build were as follows, as you can see. We have a portal, which is kind of like the place where you go to configure everything, and that hits our RESTful API called Traffic Operations, and that's where all the business logic and all that stuff is stored. Traffic Stats is a tool that collects data from our monitoring component, Traffic Monitor, and it aggregates it and shoves it into a time series database. We use Influx. And Traffic Monitor, which I mentioned again, but I'll provide a little bit more detail, that is the keeper of what we call the health protocol. And the health protocol is the state of the CDN, but it's a protocol because we've got multiple monitors that take part in that protocol to decide whether or not something is considered available or unavailable to serve content on a CDN. And then finally, Traffic Router, we have to route traffic to these caches, the Apache Traffic Server or HTTPD caches. So, this diagram is a little hard to read, but basically I highlighted two things. We got this and this. Sorry, I'm a little shaky right now. Traffic Router is up there with the yellow line underneath it, and under the green line, that's where the client is supposed to be. So this is just kind of to plant some seeds for when we talk later, but this is what a whole logical diagram for an Apache Traffic Control CDN looks like. And in the bottom right, you see the interaction between the local DNS server, which is that red box on the right, and our traffic router, which is the purple box just kind of to the upper left of all of that. So that might seem a little bit strange because we're here to talk about Tomcat, and Tomcat's a, you know, web app server, not a DNS server, but we'll get into that. So when you make a request on the CDN, this is what it looks like. Obviously, you can't read that. This is an eye chart. You can't read that. So we're going to focus on the traffic router piece of this. And essentially, what this process encapsulates is it's kind of hard to read, a DNS query to traffic router that goes up to some caching DNS servers. That's this lane right here. And that eventually makes it up to traffic router right here. That IP address goes back to the local DNS server. That's right here. And then the GET request follows from there. So this diagram's a little bit hard to follow. So we will kind of go into some detail after this. So one thing that I need to talk about before I talk about the next slide is this 302. So basically, the process that all of this follows, the DNS server was up there. your client needs to know who to talk to on the CDN first, and that all starts with DNS. So your client makes a DNS request for a domain name that's managed on the CDN, and traffic router gets that request and gives IP addresses back. Again, that's not really a very Tomcatty thing to do. So once the local DNS server has those IPs, it shoves them back down to the client, and the client says, hey, I need to make this HTTP GET for this object. And that, again, goes up to traffic router, but this time we're using HTTP, so I actually have the IP address of this guy. So when we have that IP address, we can localize, figure out where they are, and we can send them a 302 redirect, which is what this piece is right here, to 302 them to get them over to the edge. And that might not have been kind of apparent with Jim Jack's talk if you were here before. He was talking about proxying and how you set that up with the backend servers. This is how you would basically create a collection of all of those things and use traffic router to direct all of the traffic to the collection of those things based on their geography. So, consistent hashing. This is a concept that is core to CDNs. So if you want to know anything about CDNs, this is one of the most important details to remember. So it provides cache efficiency by providing a consistent means to track where everything should live within a collection of servers. It was created by two guys at MIT, Daniel Lewin and F. Thompson Layton, and they eventually went on to create Akamai, which if you guys use CDN service at all, Akamai is pretty much the 800-pound gorilla. So basically, this allows for K over N rehash keys for add and removals of nodes. So the keys are the capital K, and the nodes are the lowercase n. And so basically, what that means is when we have a health event, or a server goes down, or we need to take a server down for maintenance, or something like that, it only removes that one host from this thing called the consistent hash ring, which I'm going to show you here in a second. And essentially, all of the other nodes remain hashing as they should. So if you think back to data structures in CompSci class, when you have to rehash a hash table, everything kind of has to be rehomed. With this, you don't have to do that at all. But it very much kind of behaves like a big hash table in a way. You just have to remember you don't rehash and the rules are a little different. So this one's going to take a little bit of work to explain, so bear with me. First, we'll start off here. We've got four nodes, and they're represented by colors. Hopefully, we don't have too many color receptor-deficient people here. So if you do, let me know, and we can talk about getting a monochrome copy. But you have what we call replicas. So if we take node A here, we see 23, 9, and 15. And so for each one of these nodes, we create n number of replicas. So by default, I believe that's 1,000 in our system, or 999, something like that. And so we construct this big hash ring, and it contains every single replica. And we run this string that we create, which is essentially like the short host name of a cache with a number. And we run that through the same exact hash function. And we build up this big hash ring, and we do that for every single cache that we have on our CDN. And then when you go to request something, we run that request path through the same hash function, and we figure out what that number is relative to the other numbers on the hash ring. And so what you see here is if you want stars, that might hash to 25, and that gets sent to node C, HBO from 2 to 3, from this guy, he goes 11, to 13, and that's node D. So every time you make a request for any one of these paths, this is how it will behave until you have something happen with one of these hosts. So let's say we lose node D. Let's go back. So pay attention to this line and this line right here, and watch where they move, and the green dots are going to get grayed out here. So essentially what this is showing is that behavior, the consistency behavior of the way the consistent hashing works. So for any of the content that resided between basically this dead node and this node, it all shifts this way. And that happens up here too. This guy was hashing here, now he shifts here. If this guy was hashing here, which he would have been, he'll now hash down here. So I just put a few examples of different paths that might come through a Comcast linear video CDN. And also, I didn't really mention, this is supposed to be kind of the range, you know, the way when you're searching through this hash list, how each node kind of defines where they are in there. You don't actually have like a property that says this node is from here to here. You use an algorithm to figure that out.
Is that your logo to the hash
map? I'm not sure what you mean.
Maybe not.
I don't know. What's your question?
My question is the hash ring
and where
the logo?
Oh, no. I think we were just being silly, thinking about things that had to do with traffic and stuff like that. The hash, I mean, that would be a good explanation, but I don't have a good story for you, unfortunately. So we can go back to this, by the way, if we need to. I'm going to be talking about consistent hashing a little bit more. So. Anyway, we went through all these components that we built, and we're here to talk about Tomcat and Traffic Router, not about all these ancillary components and stuff, so let's go ahead and do that. So first, Tomcat and Traffic Router equals love. It's a little cheesy. So what is Traffic Router? Traffic Router is a Java application that's deployed in Tomcat 8.5x. It's mostly horizontally scalable and stateless. The mostly part kind of depends on how you choose to do this deployment. It's authoritative, DNS authoritative, for the CDN domain name. So you would have a domain like example.com, and you want to build a CDN, so you create a subdomain called cdn.example.com, and you set up NS records, and you delegate those records down to your traffic router FQDNs, and that's how we get DNS traffic to start getting towards our Tomcat component. We use consistent hashing not only for the HTTP part of the request, but we also can use it configurably on the DNS requests themselves as well. So if you ask for a, we've got different types of delivery services, and if you ask for a DNS-based delivery service, which is I'll get into in a minute, it's just a list of IP addresses, we use consistent hashing to make sure it's always the same list of IP addresses. So we don't have this content migration moving around in the edge, screwing up our cache efficiency, which ultimately, the lower your cache efficiency is, the more you're paying in transit costs. The traffic router consumes the health state published by traffic monitor, which is why we consider traffic router to be stateless. Before it does anything, it starts up and it starts talking to traffic monitor to get the state. And most importantly, this is the entry point for all requests into our CDN. So if you have your traffic routers go down, if you push a bad config, you're having a really bad day. So this is a list of the core features that we support. I don't really feel like I need to enumerate all of these because you all can read, but I'll go over a few of them. Obviously, Tomcat can do TLS and SNI, but you'll be interested to see that we do this a little differently. We have different output formats, so one thing to realize is this application is different from your traditional deployed Tomcat app where you'll have a Tomcat app server and multiple web apps deployed under there. This is one single app that takes over all of Tomcat because we have to be able to send any HTTP request for all of the delivery services. Delivery services are basically a logical container of configuration that maps into a CDN FQDN. So you would have like videos.cdn.example.com. That's a delivery service. So we have to be able to send all of those different FQDNs and then consistent hash on that full path. So we can't say slash Comcast content router slash whatever and hash on that because nobody's going to have that path in their URLs for their video or whatever they're serving up. So we have to take up that full request path. Client steering, we're going to get into an example of this, but this is something that we have to do at Comcast to build in the ability for clients to be smarter and make decisions when there is a failure. Jim Jag was talking about how you would do that on the back end. We do that on the back end with something called multi-site origin with traffic server, similar to what he was showing in his talk. But on the front end, we do the same thing too, where we can provide a list of options. We can order this list based on our architectural requirements. Dispersion, that's another thing. Eventually, we're going to improve this feature and make it more intelligent, but we have, for example, over 1,000 caches deployed. They all have 20 gig links in them right now. Eventually, it's going to be 100 gig. We're testing that right now. And In some cases, I'm sure lots of you might watch Game of Thrones on Sunday. In one metropolitan area, if you're using this 302 consistent hash scheme, eventually you're going to send so many clients to one single cache that that cache is going to be out of bandwidth. So the health protocol deals with that, pulls that guy out, and then it affects the consistent hash ring, how I was showing. But one way to get ahead of that is to use dispersion, and it basically says, well, consider the first in closest host. So you'll start bouncing further away from that object on that hash ring, and you'll say these three nodes are able to serve this request, and it helps disperse that load a little bit better so you don't have a hot spot on a single cache just because Game of Thrones dropped and everybody wants to watch it. Localization, this you see this deep part, and coverage. So coverage zone in Comcast speak is a way to map, I guess traffic control speak, a way to map subnets to metropolitan areas. We call that a cache group. It's a big logical container of caches. The deep part of that allows you to associate an individual cache or two with a subnet. And I'll get into that in a little bit to discuss why we do that at Comcast. The DNS side, we do federation, which is interesting. If we see DNS traffic coming from certain resolvers, we can then CNAME you off of our CDN. For example, we at Comcast have some external CDNs that we also manage, but some of the URLs are hard-coded to come into us, so when we see that DNS traffic coming up, they're coming to us, we CNAME them off. We also have the ability to do delivery service limits, so you could say don't exceed a certain number of requests per second, bandwidth, whatever. And if you do, there's this thing called a bypass destination. So you could say, all right, well, I only want to allow this much bandwidth, and if we exceed that, we can redirect to another CDN, we can just send a 503 service unavailable. There's a number of things that you can do there. And then, of course, like any good system, we've got APIs and metrics that are available. Excuse me. So this is where it gets weird. First thing I want to talk about with our Tomcat integration is this thing that we call the Languid connector. Jim Jagg kind of mentioned some of these timeout scenarios with clients. You don't want to have a client sitting there connected waiting and not really knowing what's going on, because that sort of a timeout is painful for the user. So what we did was we said, well, we don't want Tomcat to just start up and start listening, because our application actually can take a long time to start. We have a DNSSEC-enabled DNS server, and at Comcast, we have hundreds of delivery services and hundreds of permutations of these delivery services because they're all dynamically answered. So that's a lot of compute just to crunch all those numbers. So while it does that, when it first starts up, we have this Languid connector that sits in the way and basically doesn't allow Tomcat to open up its sockets, and the kernel, because the port isn't open, the kernel's just sending TCP resets saying, go away, go away, go away. But that's great for the client, because the client can react very quickly to those rather than waiting around for whatever their random timeout interval happens to be. And the way that we implemented this is also a little funky. We use JMX as the conduit to get from our application to the connector. So when our application is done with its startup process, it publishes a message to an MBean through JMX, and the connector is sitting there waiting for it. And when it sees it, then it says, oh, I can complete my startup, and it opens up the sockets, and we're ready to serve traffic. So this morning, we learned that traffic, or Tomcat, can now restart, you can now push certificates down to Tomcat and have them take effect without a restart, which is great. When we embarked upon this, like originally with Tomcat 6, that was obviously not something that you could do. And so we developed our own custom key manager, because we don't like dealing with Java key stores, CA certs, all of that is just a big pain in the butt. So we created a custom SSL implementation that integrates with a component that we have called Traffic Vault. And essentially what that is just a React server that sits in a protected network like way back, and our API can talk to it and nothing else, and our traffic router can talk to our API and get all of that material and bring it down. And we don't require a Java key store, we don't require any restarts, and all of this stuff, now that we've got the ability to do this with Tomcat 8, 5, and 9, we integrate with OpenSSL, which was amazing for us in terms of performance. Also, I don't know if you guys know this, but it's kind of hard to find a specific spec file for Tomcat out there. I know that sounds kind of silly because you just download one and build it. Well, we're an open source project, so we can't just grab somebody's random spec file without being concerned about licensing and all that stuff. So we built our own spec file, and we download Tomcat because it's a required dependency for our software. And we build that when we build everything else. And as you can see, this is kind of the dependency chain. And we moved fully into systemd because we're a CentOS 7 project, at least right now. So all of the systemd config goes into startup.properties. Those are things like the limits, you know, number of file descriptors, things like that. And Tomcat's configuration is left pristine, while all of our application configuration that relates to Tomcat lives under traffic routers. So it's basically a vanilla Tomcat 8.5x install. And our stuff's all off to the side, just referencing it. So with all of this madness, I've talked about a custom connector. I've talked about a custom SSL implementation. And you're probably wondering what that looks like. So this is a little blurry, this projector. But essentially, the stuff that's in green is the stuff that relates to the Langwid connector. This ready attribute and this port attribute, that's like metadata to tell the connector what it needs to look for. So you can kind of configure this stuff based off of your needs. You'll also notice we've got these orange things right here. I'm going to talk about that right at the end of my talk. If any of you know what this is, you know where I'm going. This red thing right here, that's the implementation name for our custom key store. So that's the actual implementation class that Tomcat uses to figure out where to get its certificates, instead of the regular Tomcat one. And so we can basically seed all that data so that guy can get what he needs at request time. So tuning. This is a little bit of JVM tuning. This is a little bit of system tuning. It's a little bit of GC tuning, actually, too. So obviously, small heaps are not good for a highly concurrent, highly active application. So we cranked those up to crazy values. We have hundreds of delivery services, as I said, with lots of permutations of dynamic zone files that have to be managed in this big cache that sits in the middle. It's a Guava cache that sits in the middle of our DNS server. And so we don't typically go up very high, but you know, we have it sized appropriately based on what we need for our deployment. I know I'm being very vague here, but everybody has to do some amount of tuning there. The G1 garbage collector, this worked really well for us. There may be other garbage collectors that work better for your purposes, or maybe even ours, but when we did our testing, this one really improved performance for us. From, you know, the stock GC is not really all that good for our needs. So system tuning, we do a lot of tuning of the actual kernel, like lots of TCP settings and stuff like that. It's fairly standard for CDNs to have to do that. The stock settings aren't always the best, and that's not just with our caching platform of ATS, but also the traffic router, because even though the request ratio is very skewed towards traffic server, traffic router has to get them in and out as quickly as possible, because it's just doing 302s, and it's just doing DNS answers, so these are very, very small things. So not to get too into the weeds, but for example, we use jumbo frames on our caches, and we don't use it on this guy, and that's why. All right, traffic router at work. I've been talking a lot about the craziness and not a lot about what it does. So an average day, everything is in a day scale here except for this thing at the bottom. We cooked the numbers a little bit because our legal people get a little annoyed if we put just Comcast numbers out there. But these top two lines are kind of the ones to focus in on for traffic routers. So as I said, it's the gatekeeper for all CDN requests. So over 200 million per day for DNS, 300 million for HTTP, 1.5 LOCPM. Does anybody know what that is? We like to make up some funny metrics. LOCPM is how many libraries of Congress per minute we can serve. So 1.5 per minute. Over 35 petabytes served, and that's in one day. And over a billion edge transactions in one day, that's a lot. And over 18 exabytes served since 2012. And that goes like way back before we were even open source. We keep this ridiculous, uh, we, we have this daily mountain chart that we call it, but we've got this graph of all of the time that we've existed that basically tracks all our bandwidth over time. And that's what it adds up to, which is pretty ridiculous if you ask me. So, because we've been talking a lot about DNS, we have to set the table with that first. This decision diagram wasn't really meant for you guys to get into the weeds on because it's, you know, a lot of steps. It's basically I took a look at the code and mapped it to that. It's probably easier to go look at the source code. But essentially what you need to do is as soon as a request comes in from a resolver, and I guess it could be a client, but most of the time this comes in from a resolver. This would be Comcast's customer infrastructure resolvers, 75, 75, 75, 75, or Google's 8.8.8.8. We get a request in from one of those guys, and we have to first locate the zone. That's what all DNS servers do. But then we need to decide whether this is a static request or a dynamic request. So if it's a static request, we just do a quick zone lookup and say, is this here? And if it is, we send it out. If it's not, then it gets a little bit more tricky. So we've got the zone, but we need to know what delivery service it's associated with, because that's the object in, you know, if we're talking inside the Java program, that's the object that's got all of the business rules for what we have to do. So we use regex to do that on, you know, FQDNs are separated by dots. That works really well with regex. And so we use that to match the delivery service. And once we have that delivery service, we can then figure out the means by which we are supposed to localize the client. The strategies are configurable. I mentioned deep coverage zone. I mentioned regular coverage zone. Geolocation I have not talked about, but we integrate with a couple of different geolocation providers. One of them is MaxMind. One of them is Neustar. So if we don't know where somebody lives because we don't have, they're not on our network, we know where everybody is on our network, but when you're outside of our network, like when I'm using my phone here in Canada, we have to use MaxMind for that. So then after we know where the person is, we can select the healthy caches. That's the health protocol again, the state that we get from traffic monitor. We say, okay, well, I know where they are in this metropolitan area, in the hash ring, who are the healthy caches for this FQDN? And then we serve that up. And so that's that serving it up piece that I just kind of glossed over is this fill dynamic zone. So you basically select your healthy caches, and then you fill this dynamic zone. You shove it into the Guava cache so you don't have to do that work again, and then you serve up the response. And part of that filling the dynamic zone, sometimes, depending on whether or not it's enabled, you have to sign that zone, which is, I would say, a few hundred millisecond hit just to do that. Which is why we have to use the Guava cache, so not everybody has to take that penalty. It would be terrible for performance. So this whole mess, all of this, what that boils down to is essentially a DNS answer that looks like this. So if you ask for edge.images.cdn.example.com, and you're in Denver, which is where I live, you would get this list of IPs. Obviously, this is a contrived example. Same request made from San Francisco, same name, different IPs. This is what I mean when I say a dynamic zone. So we have two copies of this zone. We've got one for Denver and one for San Francisco. And if there's a health event that happens, we have to generate a new one. We run short TTLs here, by the way. 30 might look strange, but that's actually, it's normal for us, but I would even say that's long. Sometimes we run a 5-second TTL. Because you don't want, if this bottom host goes down, you don't want that in the RR set, in the cache of the local resolver. You want that out as quick as possible. So HTTP, this gets even worse. You can't read this at all. Like I said, I'm gonna be uploading this stuff to our website so everybody's got it. And basically it's a similar request flow, except you can notice here we've got like two columns. We've got this column and we got that column. So, first thing you do, you receive a request in HTTP. This is into our Spring Java application through Tomcat. This is like the normal process. Well, kind of glossed over the certificate selection piece, but assuming that's been done properly, we have to identify the type of request, and that relates to this tree here. So if you're on the left side or the right side, you're either a single response or a multi-response. And the multi-response is what I was touching on earlier, where we want to give the clients, we want to give them multiple options before they come back to talk to us, because we know there are multiple options. Again, we go through the same regex matching procedure, the same localization procedure, same cache selection procedure, except the consistent hash is only on the path. We drop query parameters, path parameters, all that stuff basically screws up your hash function, the output of your hash function, and would bring inconsistency into your consistent hashing, which is obviously really bad. One other interesting thing, this order subordinates if necessary piece. So if you're in the right-hand track over here, you've got a list that you need to return, a list of unique FQDNs, and you may want to order that explicitly. You might want to say, put this one first, put this one last. You may want to say, order this list by proximity of the client to the origin sitting way back on the other side of the CDN, because we've got the ability to associate lat and long with your origin. So I can say, always take this path that's really close to you, then kind of fan away as you have failures. And then, of course, I've been talking about 302s, but we also have a JSON response format. And the JSON is necessary because not all clients, I was kind of laughing, somebody was talking earlier about the clients and how they're finicky and this and that, and that's the world we live in. When you run a CDN, you run into every funky user agent that's ever been invented, and you have to solve for it. So with JSON, you may have a JavaScript-based video player, and that JavaScript-based video player has no access to the headers for the response, so he can't dip in and grab anything out of there. So if we wanted to put custom headers in there to say, here's option A, B, C, D, and not have a body in there, we couldn't do it because certain classes of our clients wouldn't be able to do it, which is a real bummer. So get down into the weeds a little bit more. This is what a default regular HTTP delivery service response looks like. So you make your GET request, and here's the host example. You'll notice this TR that precedes it. That's a special pointer that's configurable that basically it's what we call the routing name. So this is the name that you give to your customers. You build a delivery service, and you configure the name that you want to be your A record for the edge. In this case, it's TR. In other cases, we use edge. It just kind of depends. So this, again, is Denver. This is San Francisco. It's the same pattern. The only difference is right here we've got edge SFB10, and we've got edge DEN02 here. If we ask for foo.m3u8 repeatedly in the Denver area, if my neighbor asks for that, if everybody asks for it, it's going to go to that same exact cache in Denver. Unless we have dispersion turned on, then it would be, you know, some set of, you know, in number randomly shuffled up. So we would say like the top four, like I said before, and then we shuffle that and then send one of those four out. So a no redirect response is basically the exact same thing. The only difference is you put in this query parameter and we stop doing the 302. We shove in a content type, and here's a simple, because this is not a multi-delivery service, this is just a single delivery service. We just have one location in here. And again, that's for clients that are kind of dumb and can't do header stuff. Client steering, this is where it gets a little bit more interesting. And so when I was talking about what a delivery service FQDN looks like, see how this is linear-A, linear-B, linear-C. I've also shown here, this is dispersion at work. You would normally have 02, 02, 02 right there, but these are different delivery services. So this has a correspondence with your origin right here, and then this is your edge cache. So one-to-one with origin here. Again, we have to put a content type in here, but you will also see 302 found in location with content type, and you're like, what? That's perfectly legal per the RFCs, but surprise, not all clients actually like that, and they freak out, and they can't consume it, because they see the 302 and they just follow it right away. They just disregard whatever's in the body. So we have another similar thing. This one's called TR Red. And one thing that I'll mention now that I didn't show on the previous slide, see, this name is different. This one's just tr.linear.cdn.example.com. And now we've got linear-A, linear-B, linear-C. So what this is what we call a client-steering delivery service or a multi-response delivery service. And these are just regular old delivery services, like from my first example. So we take we created a new type of delivery service that's basically just a way to group subordinate delivery services underneath them, but they still have all of the same DNS plumbing because they still need one single entry point into the CDN. So that's how we associate the subordinate DSs with the parent delivery services. So, retrospective. I'm going a little bit quicker than I was in my demo. But this is a Venn diagram that kind of explains how we use Traffic Server, Tomcat, and how that blends in with our community. Obviously, Tomcat and Traffic Server don't really mix, so you can't put them together. So the reason why we're successful is because of the community, and it's because Tomcat specifically, I mean, well, maybe not specifically, but yes, definitely, the Tomcat community has really good developers in it, and we benefit from that, and I'll tell you why here in a second. And then Traffic Control relies heavily on Traffic Server currently, which is the 800-pound gorilla of web caching, which, you know, we even kind of recognizes way too much power for certain use cases, so we've even started development of our own fully RFC-compliant linear web cache. And when we say linear web cache, what that means is it's a RAM-only cache, at least today. Linear video is it only exists for a short period of time, and then it evaporates. So you can only cache it for about 5 minutes, and then it's just off the CDN. Most people are time-shifted these days, so linear probably seems a little weird, but we do a lot of video like that at Comcast. So this linear cache, we call it Grove, is specifically tailor-made just for that use case. And that is also open-sourced and part of our project. It's just kind of still in beta mode, so I'm not really trying to advertise that too much today. And so the path to Tomcat 8.5 was kind of interesting. And ultimately, this was the main reason why I wanted to come talk out here, was kind of to say thanks to the Tomcat community and to explain kind of what happened and the order of events that happened. So a group of traffic controllers, I guess we could call ourselves, we've been to lots of these Apache cons, but last year was notable because there were a lot of TLS talks, and a lot of work has been done by really smart people to really improve the quality of Tomcat and the performance of Tomcat. And I don't really want to mention it, but we were on a really ancient version of Tomcat that had none of those performance benefits. And we had all that weird, you know, custom connector, custom SSL implementation stuff that we had to deal with. And we were like, oh, I don't have the resources to work on this right now. So we just kind of let that go for a while, and we let it go for too long. And so it was kind of an effort to get onto 8.5. So Dave Newman, who's in the audience, he's actually the chair of the PMC for our project. We met Mark Thomas and started talking to him, and we told him about how we use Tomcat, and we're like, hey, you know, we might switch off of Tomcat because the performance is just, you know, even if we upgrade, it's not great. And then we discovered at that specific ApacheCon, everybody was talking about all these great improvements to Tomcat, and we're like, well, geez, we don't need to move at all. We just need to update. So that's what we did. As soon as we got back, we cracked open the code and just went to work. And earlier this summer, probably I would say June-ish, we completed development. And we had this perfect storm of a large number of clients that were now hitting us that were never hitting us before. We have this very specific component within our Comcast infrastructure that is a very... say highly concurrent client that isn't very nice to Traffic Router. And so it basically started crushing our Traffic Routers on the old version. And our hair was on fire, and we're like, oh crap, what do we do? And I am a huge fan of failing forward, so we upgraded, because I mean, we're already screwed, right? So couldn't get much worse. We had already tested it. We knew it was gonna be better. In fact, this is how much better it is. And if you know mathematically what that means, that is a lot better. So the lessons that we learned, obviously, is stay as current as possible. I don't ever want to go through this pain that we had in the past. And you know, now that you guys are all on Tomcat 9 as the bleeding edge, I think we're probably going to try and get there pretty soon, because we need to always make sure that we're at that current release whenever possible. It's just way too much work to try to deal with the technical debt later. So then I mentioned there were some things in my server.xml earlier, and they were orange. I don't know if anybody's familiar with these things. I don't know if this is my ignorance or our project's ignorance of how Tomcat works, but it definitely, from our perspective, seemed like it changed between our ancient version of Tomcat and Tomcat 8.5. We did some Googling, and we found that all of these things that caused us problems are actually configurable, which is awesome. We love people to think ahead, like, hey, I'm doing something and I should probably make this configurable because I might be screwing somebody up. That was definitely the case here. So the first thing was this client auth false. I think we just copy-pasted some server.xml snippet into our thing for the TLS connector, and that was in there. We went to production with that. If you have client certificates on your device and you hit our traffic router, it was like, boom, provide a certificate. And that doesn't work well if it's like an iOS player that's one of our customers. Like, that's pretty crazy, right? So that wasn't good. This, I believe, we found some email thread on the Tomcat list. This was controversial. This is dropping the reason phrase from the HTTP response. I can tell you with certainty, this breaks things. Definitely breaks things. We had multiple clients break because we did not have this turned on. And who would ever think to turn that on? Nobody. We didn't. And it caused us some major problems. And we were, again, trying to figure out what was going on, Googling like mad. And finally, this was, you know, we found this thread and this was the explanation. And we were very, very thankful that it was configurable, because otherwise it would have been cracking the code open, fixing it just for us, which always sucks to have to maintain your own, you know, parallel patch. And we didn't have to do any of that. So it was kind of nice, you know. I mean, it was a bad experience initially that turned into a good one. And then this thing, again, like, clients are stupid. If that's anything you take away from this, clients can do some stupid stuff. So what this does, you Tomcat hackers in the audience probably know what this is, but this causes an encoding type to show up after the content type. So it'll say content type, application JSON, semicolon, ISO 9660, whatever. That breaks clients. So we had to also turn that off, because if we have any of those on, we get calls from very angry vice presidents saying that we're breaking their stuff and their metrics are going down. And obviously, we need to make our reputation good. So we don't want to do that. So that's pretty much all I have to talk about at this point. I did want to say thanks to Dave. He was the one that started the initial crack at getting us over to 8.5 and doing all the work on the custom SSL implementation to get it to where it needed to be to work with Tomcat 8.5. And then Andrew Schmidt, he's a Comcast guy that we basically hired to finish the work, for lack of a better way to put it. And he did, and he did a great job. Dwayne Richardson, he's in the audience. He did all load testing. I feel like half the audience is us. He did all the load testing. He's the one that proved out that it was going to perform well. Oh, I didn't mention the big thing, the big reason why I wanted to say thanks was to Mark Thomas, which I'll just say it now. When we were at ApacheCon last year and talking to Mark Thomas and telling him, you know, we've got this crazy way we're using Tomcat, what do you think? He looked at us like we had three eyes. And, of course, you know, that made sense to us because it is crazy. But the thing that really blew me away, and I would say our team, was during the keynote, our director of open source, her name's Nithya, she's going to be giving a talk here later this week. She was about to go on for her keynote at ApacheCon, and we had just talked to Mark, and Mark was like, oh, well, let me see if I can whip up some benchmarks for you real quick. And so he's sitting there in the keynote, like, hacking on some benchmarks for us just to prove, like, hey, this stuff really is magical. You want to stick with us. And then he showed it to us. And that right there is really when I think about, let's see, we're going to go to this slide. When I think about the Apache way, community over code, that's the sort of behavior that keeps your community strong and vibrant and makes people want to use your software and leverage it rather than run away. You know, I mean, there's been, you know, I don't want to get into it, but obviously people know what's going on in the Linux community, and we didn't feel that way at all with the Tomcat community. We felt like the Tomcat community was very welcoming despite our wacky use case, and what Mark Thomas did really, really blew me away. So with that, I can open it up for questions, and that's all I got.
Does that do anything other than just suppress the bind until the JNX message comes in?
That's all it does today.
All right. So the connectors right now have a bind on init setting that you can say either bind on init or bind on start binder. But we had another option that said
Mm-hmm.
Would that obligate your need to have a separate connector?
Possibly. If it would depend, but yeah. I mean, I'd be open to it. And I think even the restart of Tomcat that's no longer necessary for new certificates, you know, I didn't know that that was in the works and found that out today. So if it's possible for us to get off of our custom code, that would be great because obviously it's less work and less code for us to maintain. Yeah. Right.
But you actually build your own SSL implementation.
Yeah.
So is that just because you have to do all because you can only replace the SSL implementation so there's like a bunch of plumbing and then the thing you actually need?
Yeah, that was basically it.
Right. You should talk at some point about maybe limiting that so that all you have to do is implement your key manager and you can throw away the rest of your SSL implementation.
Yeah, well, and I, like I was saying previously, if the way that you guys did the certificate that store with the new implementation where you don't have to restart. If you did that in a way that we could leverage it, I would be okay with using that too. I just am not sure because normally a Tomcat application or a Tomcat app server has distinct configurations for each app or each server that it's supposed to be, and we kind of bogart the whole thing, you know? So it makes it a little bit difficult for that reason. But certainly, I mean, I would love to get some of these features into Tomcat so we can stop taking care of it. It's costly, it takes time, you know, to upgrade. That's why I keep saying I want to stay current, because if we can stay current, then it's just that much easier every time we have to do it rather than waiting. If we don't have to do it at all, that's great, and I can have those resources go work on something else on the CDN, because we've got lots of problems to solve.
Okay, so this is probably a good time to plug the Tomcat meetup, which is today at 7 p.m. right next door.
Okay.
Cool.
You have a question?
Yeah, so you mentioned the router stateless.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably easy to scale it up and down. Is there anything baked into the traffic router to tell it, hey, we need another instance, or do you handle that with some other framework?
So right now, there isn't a lot of auto-scaling in those components. That's one of the things that I said I wanted to improve with dispersion. Would be a more intelligent way to ramp that up or ramp it down based on demand. And same goes for that. We're still a pretty classical, you know, server deployment where we've got one component on one box. That's probably changing now or evolving now, especially for traffic router. It doesn't have like the same hardcore hardware demands that Apache Traffic Server does. For example, we can consume a whole Dell 730 or whatever the server is we're running. We can full bore just kill that thing. So containerization and all that stuff's kind of just complication at that point. So I will say that that's an area that we're looking to improve. And then if you go to Dan and Dwayne's talk later this week, they're doing a talk on CDN in a box where they've used Docker Compose to help developers stand up an end-to-end CDN environment to help them be more effective developing more quickly without having to learn the 500 components and how they integrate with each other. And because there's a lot of pain there. When we onboard new people, we send them through this ritual, this rite of passage of, hey, go build this box manually, and almost everybody fails, takes them weeks to do it. And so we recognize that's all of our external users too that walk up to the project and they're like, hey, this is cool, but it's so hard to like get it going. I don't even know where to start. You know, just help me. So that's what Dan and Dew worked on. And I'm hoping, you know, that architecturally we can take some of that work and then reuse it to help us in, you know, these places where we can use like Kubernetes and stuff like that to auto scale. And in fact, some of the stuff that I was hearing in the earlier talks about Tomcat in the cloud sounded pretty promising too. So I would say, you know, from my perspective, you know, we are always, I would say, on the Comcast side, just from engineering perspective, we're always tech agnostic and we'll pick the best tech for our use case. But I will say that the Tomcat community and even the HTTPD community, it's pretty good right now. There's a lot of good work going on, so we're taking advantage.
I think send response request, whatever that setting is, mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. Hack on some Tomcat, probably. It's a lot easier for us to hack on the central component than the billion permutations of clients out there.
Okay.
So I'm out of time. Let me know if you have questions. We're going to be around. Just look for the traffic control guys. Thank you.